All right, everyone, welcome to the CCHA show, episode 25 of season two, semifinals edition, just finishing up the quarterfinals with some exciting action. We have two guests for you today. Jack Hittinger has been on the show a number of times from USCHO, formerly covering the Beavers for the Bemidji Pioneer. Jack, thanks for coming on once again.
Thanks for having me again.
And a newcomer, we've been looking to have him on for a while, actually, but Sam Engstrom, who is the play-by-play voice of the Tommies on ESPN 1500. Sam, thanks for joining us.
A pleasure, Perry. Thanks for having me on, even though the season's over for us.
Yeah, a little disappointed. I know when I asked you, I hope I didn't cause anyone to think I would have jinxed anything, but it was a great series up in Mendota Heights there between the Tommies and Lakers. Just we'll get into it right away, I guess. But seemingly the Tommies kind of running out of gas, maybe running out of players. And Sam, what was your overall take on the series? Obviously a heartbreaking way to go out with 6.6 seconds left and Dawson Tritt getting that rebound there.
Yeah. Discreetly before the series, I kind of felt in my heart that Lake State had a chance to win in three because of how depleted the Tommies were. But the way it played out was unexpected with, the Tommies in game two looked so energized and so rejuvenated after kind of a clunker on Friday that I actually felt going into Sunday's game like the Tommies had the momentum and a great chance to win, and it played out that way. I thought they were the better team for a chunk of the first two periods. They had a 2-1 lead going to the third. And I don't even know if they ran out of gas necessarily in the third. They had a lot of good opportunities in the final period. They had a one-goal lead until about 9 minutes to go. And then Lake State tied it, and it seemed destined for overtime. And then, they block a shot at the point, leads to an odd man rush in the waning seconds, and they get a bounce after Aaron Trotter punches the puck straight up in the air. It falls off of Tritt's chest down to the ice. He hammers it in. Just a gutting way to lose when you played shorthanded for 2 months. I mean, the Tommies had an open forward spot. They lost another forward in that game, so they were really down three players in their lineup. And they were doing that all to 2024, really from the holiday break on. They were practicing shorthanded. They had 8 season-ending injuries. That's just ludicrous. And they had another forward that left the program midseason. So talk about a shortage of numbers. They were just running on fumes and still were that close to advancing. Rico Blasi, as emotional as I've seen him after that game, understandably so, because he was challenged like he's never been challenged before. So you can't really evaluate this team very truly because you just didn't see the true version of themselves this year.
Yeah, I think you can look at the way that they were playing when they were kind of on full cylinders, right? They were in first place, and they finished, 15-20-2, but certainly not an indication of how this season went. Jack, what were your thoughts on that series and the Tommies kind of, they needed that win at Tech to even be in the situation to be hosting. So I guess that's kind of a victory in itself, maybe, to be as far as they were here, Jack.
Yeah, I know I saw them against Bemidji when the Beavers were for their final regular season series, and I think they were sort of running on fumes then, and even then they forced overtime and got that extra points, and that was sort of a gritty overtime situation that they were able to force on that Friday night game. And I talked to Rico, and I talked to whoever scored the game tying goal in that game. I can't remember who it was. Luke Manning, I think. And they were just saying, we're battling out here without without our full complement, but we're giving it our all. And I thought that's been sort of emblematic of how they played. You see them play, and they're still playing sort of the Rico Blasi brand of hockey. And that's kind of what it's all about, is grittiness and teamwork and doing up little things right. And they're still doing that even with 10 healthy forwards or whatever. So you really admire how they were able to come and play and battle till, literally the last second of their season. And I don't know, I know that they're going to be pretty good next year, but I think you just have to give credit to the way that they played all season. And I think the way, especially like on Saturday, I thought when they were able to beat Lake State, that was just like a really like gritty win there too to keep their season alive. So they've been doing it all year.
Yeah, I think you can look at different points in this kind of, the late season Tommies to see what they're kind of made of. And I harken back to that Tech game. Sam, you were up at Tech for that series there. And I mean, they seemed like the Saturday game was, kind of got away from them. Maybe not the score certainly wasn't indicative of how they played that the whole weekend, but that 2-0 win on Friday was probably as kind of the biggest kind of indication of what this team could do.
Aaron Trotter played lights out in that game. That was his first shutout of the year, which is kind of stunning with as much talent as he has that he only had one shutout. But that was how they had to win late in the year, was to get a lead and then hold it. And they played really well with the lead. And unfortunately, the Sunday game against Lake State, just the second time all year they'd lost when scoring the first goal. And against Michigan Tech that Friday, they went in, I think, the more desperate team because their season had been floundering for a few straight weekends. I think they were on a 6-game winless streak at the time. They knew they needed a win to clinch home ice, and it was scoreless until late in the second period. Liam Malmquist got a slap shot with a minute to go in the period, and then that third period was just all guts. I mean, they were outshot. They were in their defensive zone a lot. Aaron Trotter stood on his head, and they've got four out of their six defensemen that have played the last 2 months are freshmen. I mean, so they're doing it with a super young blue line core, and they just held on for dear life. And then, they emptied the clip Friday, didn't have it on Saturday, but they came up with a lot of those type of wins this season when it felt like things might have been tilting against them. They always responded with a big W. I'm thinking about both of their Saturday wins against Mankato this year as good examples. They had a lot of counterpunch to them all season long, and that's a credit to their coaching staff and their culture and their captain Lucas Wallen, who was the ultimate leader all year.
I mean, we have two kids scoring their first collegiate goals in the playoffs for you, and Jace and then Cheslock there, Sofo. So, I mean, that's that means your guys are seeing ice time that weren't earlier on in the year, and in Cheslock's case, I guess not even on the team before that. I want to get to the Tech Bowling Green series. Tech moving on here. They win pretty handily on Friday. 5-0. Second game, 6-5. It's tough to put a team away. I know we only saw one game three, but I think Jack, we see it every year with these series where even if game one is not close, it's just tougher to end a team's season.
Yeah, and I didn't get a chance to watch much of that series, but that's one of those where I feel like obviously Tech has struggled a little bit, especially at the start of the season. Maybe some of those high expectations, they disappointed a little bit with their pick to finish first and ended up finishing third. But you kind of got the sense the way that they were playing at the end of the season. Obviously they swept BG on the road a couple weeks ago, and then they split with St. Thomas, beat Mankato at Winter Carnival. So kind of the way they were playing, you figured they're playing their best hockey right now, which is when you want to be playing it as much as you would have loved to get those wins in October or November. I think BG after that, they came out and they were playing really well for probably the month of January, and then they kind of stumbled at the end with, what was it, four straight losses or whatever. So you kind of got the feeling that the series might end up a little one-sided, especially after Tech went up in that first game. You kind of felt like both BG was in trouble, and obviously that second game they were able to battle back, but and make it more of a series. But I don't know, Tech just looks like they have a little bit of a chip on their shoulder the way that they're playing now. Maybe just trying to make up for those lost expectations.
And the Tommies certainly the most injured team in the CCHA, but Tech's had their issues too, and primarily losing Austin Swankler, who was supposed to be the ringer for them coming in for the second half. He didn't score a goal. Matthew Campbell, Max Koskoperty, they've lost a handful, and they've been shorthanded as well. But I think they've flashed their potential, particularly against Bowling Green. That must be a bit of a matchup thing because they handled them in four games in 3 weeks, and two of those were completely one-sided. So I wasn't I'm not shocked to see Michigan Tech kind of peaking at the right time, and I think that they're absolutely in the mix to win this title going into the semifinals. If they just got to put it together for two games, even with a little bit of a shorthanded lineup, they've got the shutout king in goal, Blake Pietola. That's a nice little catalyst to have.
Yeah, he's got his 24th career shutout, which I believe is third most all time in the NCAA. Yeah, the Huskies rewarded a home game after the Lake State upset. I know a lot of their fans were rooting for the Lakers to kind of make that happen for them, but you know, they could still get a championship game at home if the Lakers can continue on their upset trail, if they can go up to Bemidji, or I guess go over to Bemidji and down in West. I'm not sure the geography on that, Jack, but yeah, 24 career shutouts for Pietola. He obviously not a shutout on Friday with the five, but allowed, but rookie of the week to Isaac Gordon, who had 6 points, 2 goals, 4 assists, and some really strong performances on our weekly awards this week. So I wanted to point out Gordon getting that award, and the previous series, and Connor Milburn, who was a menace, you know, for Lake State, scoring that big shorthanded goal. That was, you know, just to jump back to that series, I know, because we didn't touch on it, but that shorthanded goal that he scored was kind of a tide changer, and the Tommies not scoring in that the full 2 minutes of 5-on-3. Sam, was that kind of the biggest point of the game for you when it's all said and done there?
Yeah, I think it probably was. Now, granted, the Tommies did get the lead back and had a chance to win that game in the third, so it wasn't the be-all end-all, but you know, just to recap that sequence, Lake State lost its best player in Jared Westcott with the illegal hit, game misconduct. Tommy's also, though, lost because of that hit. They lost JD Metz. So they went from 11 forwards down to 10. So they were basically running three lines the rest of the night. So that play impacted their lines, you know, for the final two periods. But Tommy's go on the 5-minute power play, immediately give up a shorthanded goal to tie the game. All the momentum sucked out. Then they get a 5-on-3 within that 5-minute power play, don't score. And Lake State, it kind of felt like Lake State could have captured the lead at that point and then just gone on cruise control because they would have had all the momentum. But that actually didn't happen. The Tommies kind of righted the ship. They got the lead back, and they were right there. So I don't want to say that changed the outcome of the game necessarily, but, you know, if you don't give up the shorthanded goal and if you are able to take a 2-goal lead, yeah, your odds of hanging on at that point are probably a lot better than just a 2-1 game.
Right. And then I think right off the jump in the third, the Tommies hit the post. So that, I mean,
yes,
there's plenty of moments in that game that's kind of hockey for you. I know Coach Ceratori will talk about that all the time. You know, sports is weird, but you know, just little things that happen just kind of get magnified, especially in a game three like that. So you kind of think back to all of the things that could have happened. Anyway, I don't want to dwell too long on that. We want to get to our next series. The rest of these are obviously all sweeps. Bemidji State, top seed Beavers, was a little dicey there, Jack, in game one, but Eric Polkamp has become Superman here for the Beavers as of late. He's big overtime winner, 5-4 win there, and then 4-0, a little bit easier for the top seed in game two. What are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I mean, Ferris really came out and controlled like the first 10 minutes of that first game, and you kind of feel like this is the position that the Beavers have been in against Ferris a lot. I think Ferris is sort of their bugaboo team a little bit. Like, we were talking to our friend Harrison Watt, former Bulldogs play-by-play announcer, and he was saying that I was wondering if Bemidji had ever beaten Ferris in a playoff series, and he was like, I'm pretty sure not. And this is the third straight playoff series they played against each other where one of the games come to overtime. So that's just sort of a thing probably Beavers fans in the back of their mind, like, oh no, not this again. But they were able to come back, tie it up, And then, you know, Ferris scores two more. The Beavers, just the way they've been playing, I think you think that they have the ability to come back despite being down two. I know we've seen some kind of crazy comebacks from them in general this year. So they have the offensive ability to score and tie it up again. And that's what they did. So, I mean, down 4-2 in the second, Casper Magnuson gets a power play goal to pull them within one going into the intermission. And then they come out, I think they pretty much dominated that third period and just couldn't get the goal until Eric Martin scored with what, like 40 seconds left. And then goes into overtime. And you kind of like, you, if you're a Beaver fan, I think you like how the momentum was going your way in that game. And then obviously Polkamp ended it 37 seconds in with sort of an insane place to be on in the slot with 3 seconds into the game, just tapping it in basically to the goal. That was pretty
Derek Jeter ask, right?
Yeah.
The Derek Jeter, what was a cutoff play against the A's where he was like, yeah, why was he there?
And then he does the hang up the phone celebration, just kind of a very emphatic way to end that game. And then Saturday, I think Ferris was just a little, I don't know if they were demoralized, but I mean, 4-0. Beavers didn't actually score in that game until the second period, but it just, they looked a lot better in the Beavers looked a lot better coming out of that game than they did in the first game, and it never really looked like Ferris was threatening in that second game. So Beavers get the sweep. That's their what, ninth win in a row, something like that. Is that
10th
right?
Or 11th, but yeah, it's, I mean, unbeaten streak is up there. Yeah,
yeah, they're playing really well right now. So it's really hard to, I mean, obviously you never know what's going to happen, but I think that's just how they've been playing. So you like their odds when it comes to a game two like that playing against Ferris. So I don't know. Rambling a little bit here, so
you know, what's kind of interesting is that like a team like Bemidji is probably rooting pretty hard for St. Thomas to get to the championship game, because then they're in, then
right,
they're into the NCAA tournament regardless of the outcome. So I could very much see in the back of their mind saying, all right, let's go Tommies, let's go, let's get to that title game, let's host Michigan Tech next week, knock them off, and then come play us. And then it's a risk-free roll of the dice. We can lose and make it, or we can win and make it, which is kind of an interesting dynamic in this conference, and that'll be in play next year as well. But isn't it a truism, guys, that these big underdogs always give you one dogfight in all of these series? You know, Northern Michigan, you know, took Mankato to the wire on Friday. The Bulldogs to Ferris took Bemidji to the wire. And then night two, Bowling Green against Michigan Tech. Everybody's got one game in them. Even the 3-32 Tommies of 2021-22, even they took Mankato to the wire. And that was a top five Mankato team. Even they got challenged in the playoffs one game by the Tommies that year. So it always happens that way. But more often than not, the higher seed usually prevails.
That's a really good point, Sam. You know, this, you know, we saw it again. We saw it last year as well with, you know, Ferris kind of a Cinderella story. Northern went on a run. But this year, it didn't seem like, you know, teams had their months of playing really solid hockey. But, you know, Bemidji, you know, they elevated themselves to the top of the league, which was so tight, which allowed them to kind of do that. Whereas other teams that went on late season runs weren't able to use that to propel themselves into a higher seed in a hosting situation, like maybe a Northern or a Ferris last year, but they did get that opportunity. You know, speaking of Minnesota State, as they were able to hold on for a sweep over Northern, as Sam mentioned, the first game very tight, 2-1, you know, coming down to the wire there. The second game was not a 6-1 game. Obviously, some of these series can, you know, playoff games can get out of hand when the emotions are high and a second or third goal goes in. Obviously empty netters are involved in some cases, but Sam, thoughts on the Mavs being able to take care of business at home? I think a lot of folks had Northern giving them maybe this one goes three. It was the 4-5, right?
Yeah. You know, I've obviously thought, you know, I've seen a lot of Mankato, you know, being that they played the Tommies six times in the first year. And I've seen just Mankato play a lot on the big stage. And I've always thought them to be a very professional operation. And I think that even in the post-Hastings era, I think that's continued. Like, I think that they've carried over enough players and enough of that culture to where they believe that they're going to win every game. A lot of the special teams structure and aesthetic seems to have carried over as well. I've been really impressed when I've seen them this year. All four games they played with St. Thomas were super competitive. And I think they're a threat. I mean, they're obviously going to need to win the postseason championship to make the NCAA tournament, but the future's bright for them. They've got good young talent in there. I think Strand did a fantastic job this year. Doesn't surprise me that they showed up in playoff time, particularly after the way they were kind of embarrassed in Bemidji the week before when they had a chance to go steal the title in the regular season. They responded well. I would expect nothing less. I think that it's there for the taking. And I think that all four teams in this semifinal round probably believe that they have what it takes to win this championship. But Mankato Bemidji rematch is what I'm rooting for, because that's obviously the most compelling in-state Minnesota rivalry. Mankato trying to get revenge on that final weekend.
Yeah, certainly on the table. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk some CCHA year-end awards and preview the semifinals here on the CCHA show.
Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goal. He scores.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness gracious me.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
All right, guys, back here on the CCHA show with Jack Hittinger, Sam Engstrom. Some awards are out, the all-league teams. I guess we can run on those because those kind of encapsulate what the coaches had in mind as far as the voting is concerned. Bemidji State, a true flavor for them on the first team. But first, the rookie team, which I thought was interesting, that all that six of the eight teams were represented on the all-rookie squad. Any standouts for you? Obviously the Eric Polkamp, we'll start with Sam, just looking at the team, I guess, anybody, you know, stand out to you as far as that group is concerned?
Yeah. Well, I just got a good look at John Harrington for Lake State in that Lake State series. He was a little quiet in the series, but, I like the player. I like his production. I think Polkamp, of the six on this list, probably popped the most to me on the ice. I mean, he's an NHL draft pick for a reason. The guy's legit. Evan Murr as a defenseman, you know, he's got a similar impact on the ice where you feel their threat offensively. I think Polkamp might have led the Beavers in shots on goal this year, if I'm not mistaken. Like that's how impactful he was. So I think that, the defensemen on this list are the ones that stood out most to me. And then, you know, Bowling Green, I know that their program's in some turmoil right now. They're changing coaches. But if Cole Moore sticks around, I think that he's going to be a force to be reckoned with in the years to come in goal.
Yeah, I agree. There was points watching Cole play that I thought, how is this team going to score on this guy without getting a rebound, like a second rebound, right? Because he's so big and he's positionally very strong. You could see him playing at the next level. Jack, what do you think about the rookies?
He was especially when they were sort of going through their turmoil and they had
when Stover was hurt. Yeah.
And Stover got hurt and you think, oh, this freshman's coming in sort of cold. He really gave them a chance to win some games and probably lifted the team up a little bit when they needed some more, I don't know about reassurance, but just like when they were having all their issues, he was sort of the definite bright spot for them as a young freshman coming in. So I thought he was pretty well deserved on this list. And Isaac Gordon too, I feel like he's one of those guys that it's maybe a little, I don't want to say he's under the radar, but he wasn't really talked about I don't remember as much coming in from Texas.
Oh, preseason?
Probably because they had so much firepower offensively coming in, back with Kukkonen and some of these other guys. And then when Swankler joined, everyone was talking about him. But Gordon, I think he was maybe a little bit more under the radar, but he's a really impressive top line for, I mean, they getting top 5 minutes for them now. And I think he's a really good player. And I think they really needed him because of how Kukkonen struggled a little bit this year and some of those other offensive guys. So I think he was really valuable for Tech this year.
Yeah, he was plus 10. I know plus minus isn't the greatest stat, but I think over the course of a season, it can tell you a little bit about, you know, players' performance on the ice. And you had 20 points on the season as a freshman, you know, very solid for Gordon. And, you know, this we'll move on to the second team. And I do want to point out just a little bit under the hood for folks that, as far as the coaches voting, it was very tight between, you know, Lucas Wallen and making the first team. And I know, you know, Sam's watched Lucas all year. But the second group, I think, very strong as well. Obviously, Gordon makes the second team and the rookie team because of that scoring ability and kind of carrying Tech offensively. Rylan Mosley was great, but he wasn't the same Rylan Mosley we saw production-wise from last year. Josh Singer, we saw him as a freshman on the all-rookie team, continuing that, you know, offensive prowess he had. And then maybe, you know, Tech folks would have liked to have seen Blake Piatola on the first team, but he wasn't quite the Blake Piatola we had last year, right? So I think these are pretty fair. And then obviously Connor Milburn, who I think led the league in conference points. You know, Sam, I want to have you on to speak a little bit to Wallen, who is, I believe, the first St. Thomas All-League selection of any kind.
Yeah, 3-point guy this year. If you watched any amount of that Lake Superior State series, I think he was the best guy on the ice. And that includes West Scott. That includes Milburn. He was everywhere. He made his presence felt in every way, 200 feet, defensively, offensively, just an unstoppable force. And he's not maybe the most pure goal scorer of all time, but he's a creator. He's a relentless worker. He's a motivational leader. And I think this is well-deserved for him. A captain as a sophomore for a reason. They've got him for 2 more years. Sky's the limit for Lucas Wallen, who really showed up. And he played every game, too, through some pain. He had to leave one of the Lake State games for a minute because he got checked into the boards, came right back. Like, the guy is as tough as they come. So really proud of him. The guy I wanted to talk about, you know, too, just briefly, Matias Scholl. Like, look at the Beavers when he was hurt, and then look at the Beavers now with him healthy. They didn't get the best backup goaltending, but once Scholl got back, and he got hurt against St. Thomas back in October. Once they got him back, totally different ball game, and that's a hot goalie that can maybe even steal a game in the NCAA tournament, assuming that they finish this off and win the CCHA. That's someone that you want in your corner if you're taking on like a Boston in the first round. That's someone who could win one for you.
Yeah, Scholl 10-2-2 on that first team. It was very tight, I will say, as well, for the goaltending between the three finalists. But, you know, you got Scholl, Piatola, and Jake Seibel, who's on that finalist list. Jack, thoughts on the second team and then the first team as well, which is full of Beavers, which I'm sure made you a little bit happy, at least, as a Beaver fan at heart.
Yeah, well, I guess there are two guys that I mean, obviously, we all know about Blake Piatola, so we don't need to get too much into talking about him. But the two defensemen on that second team, Evan Murr and Josh Zinger, I thought they're both really good selections. Murr is another guy that, I mean, he's a freshman, obviously. And I think, obviously, he's not the most talked about freshman defenseman coming into the season this year. Maybe not even the second, because we had another Piatola freshman. I know a lot of people were talking about. But yeah, he's just been really solid for them. And especially considering how Mankato has such a good tradition of these really good offensive defensemen that come in.
Livingstone,
like Perosi, Livingstone, and some of these other guys. And I think he sort of is carrying on that legacy a little bit as a freshman. I thought Josh Zinger too, he's another guy that maybe more of he's still 12 points, more of a defensive defenseman guy, but I thought he's one of those guys with who was just a really solid defensive defenseman for an MU. I know they gave up a lot of goals, but I think he's still a pretty key player for them on the ice.
Any thoughts on the two non-Bemidji players making the first team there, yeah, and Morton and Westcott?
I mean, both of those guys, you think any team would love to have them. It's like anchoring their first line. I mean, Morton, I think, is especially one of the guys where, I mean, I think we've all talked about, I mean, he was hurt last year and didn't get to play a lot, but he's been really good. Coming back, and he's clearly their best player, and I think one of the reasons why it wasn't the sort of the doom and gloom that everyone was predicting for them, you know. Sorry, I was looking up. And then Westcott is one of these guys that, I mean, Lake State, I didn't realize just how good their power play was, but yeah. I mean, the top power play in the conference, and he's sort of the quarterback of that power play unit with Tritt and the Milburns and Harrison Roy, I think, has a lot of time on there. So he's just got a lethal shot, and I think he's a really fun player to watch. And I don't know if he'll be available for next week's game with Bemidji, but I was just thinking about that. Like, if they don't have him, I think they might be in trouble. But he's such a good player for them that I think those two non-Beavers were definitely well deserved on that first team.
It's cool. To interrupt you. I was going to say cool that they're both late bloomers. I mean, like with Rode and Polkamp, they come in as freshmen. You know they're legit. Westcott, you know, toils for a year in Penn State. And then he doesn't really emerge until his senior year. And the same with Morton. Like, Morton dealt with injuries. He was on a stacked team. He was buried. He wasn't in the top six. And now we see what they can really do, thrown into bigger roles in, you know, position of health. And it's just cool to see their years of college hockey rewarded now with these breakthrough seasons.
Absolutely. And Morton kind of, you know, I don't want to say put the team on his back during that quarterfinal, but he had a couple of, you know, highlight reel type goals for the Mavs, saying, well, I'm not losing the series. This isn't how my kind of season ends. So, you know, it's those kind of games from your seniors. I know Westcott was having a decent series, Sam, in that series before he got to the game misconduct. I believe Jackie will be available. I don't think there's any supplemental discipline there.
Yeah, he scored a big goal too on Friday.
Right.
I believe that gave them the 1-0 lead, or was it the 2-1 lead?
Yeah, he drove the net. They had a couple of goals that were just big power forward kind of type moves to get to the net.
Yep. He knows how to finish. You know, he was, remember, the player of the year in October. So he was good from the jump. And he and Milburn are really tough on that scoring line for Lake State.
Yeah, big. They'll definitely cause challenges for Bemidji in our semifinals, which we'll get to. Any other thoughts on, you know, finalists, potentially, you know, forwards between Morton, Rode, and Westcott? Who you guys think had maybe the best year there?
I think I like how Westcott has sort of played. Obviously, I think Rode, like Sam said, he came in sort of a known quantity after a strong freshman season. But Westcott, I think, kind of came out of nowhere, and he was probably – I think he was one of my favorite players to watch in the league this year.
I'll go Morton as my favorite, just to be contrary. Westcott did a lot of his damage early in the year. I will say that might have slowed down a tad. I think Morton kind of kept the pedal down, but they're both fantastic players. And, you know, Westcott, to his credit, a lot of assist numbers too, because he works well with Milburn. So he's not just a goal scorer. He does a lot of stuff. And that's why he was first in points for a lot of the year in the CCHA. So both great talents. I'm excited to watch them both here this weekend.
Our new awards this year, which we have the finalists out for, and in fact, I believe we'll have the winners here. Jackson Judding, Connor Milburn, you have Arvid Kateroth from Tech, and then Luke Manning from St. Thomas. Those four, it was a different award the coaches wanted to add. We wanted some different things other than just like the best at each position. We wanted some to recognize some players that were, doing things that maybe the stats wouldn't reflect, Sam. And you got to see Luke Manning quite a bit.
Yeah.
That's defensive forwards.
Defensive forwards. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a cool award. That's not something that you hear about a lot, is defensive prowess from the forward position. But Luke Manning, he was the longest tenured Tommy. He joined the team when they were still D3. That's how far back he goes. Oh, wow. So he toiled through the D3. He, went through the 3-32-1 season in the first year of D1, and he stuck it out. And he set the tone. I think he wore the A on his jersey every single year. He was a leader through his actions and work ethic. Remember, he came from Air Force. So, I mean, he learned discipline there, certainly, but came back to play, in his home city of the Twin Cities. And he demonstrated how you impact a hockey game, maybe without the most organic or natural like scoring ability as a forward, but he was a top 10 faceoff guy and he was relentless on the boards. Love to watch him and sad to see him go.
Jack, any thoughts on those defensive forwards?
Jackson Judding, obviously. I mean, I cover the Beavers more than most teams, I guess, but Jackson Judding, I think, is a similar type of guy. I think he transferred from Colorado College a couple years ago, but ever since he's gotten to Bemidji, I think he's been one of their best faceoff guys.
And they missed him, I think, when he was out, just, as far as faceoffs.
Yeah, they really missed him when he was out. I think he got hurt against North Dakota, and they missed him, I think, the very next series, the one where they went to the Sioux and got blasted by Lake State, and partly because they couldn't win faceoffs. And he was out for a while, and they were just having a lot of trouble winning faceoffs. And ever since he's gotten back, he's been their top faceoff guy. Blocking a lot of shots, but he also can score a goal. He's really gritty, just getting down, sort of forechecking a lot. So I think he's a guy that is a very value. Maybe BSU is the MVP, despite the fact that they have all those guys that are on the first team. I think they were not winning a lot of games without him, and with him, they've been so good. For example, he scored that game winner against St. Thomas on Friday in overtime, which is a big goal for them, just making sure they got enough points to get closer to that McNaughton Cup. So I think he's going to turn out to be probably one of their MVPs this year.
Makes a lot of sense there. Lastly, on the award front, before we get to our semis, guys, defensive defensemen, Kyle Loft and Aiden Gallagher. Gallagher, I think he's led the league or was in the tops in the league in block shots just about every time, every season for him. He's a senior. I think it was good for him to get recognition because he was never going to score a lot of points. Sam, would he stand out when the few times you had a chance to see the Wildcats play?
Yeah, I missed one of the Northern Michigan series this year, so I didn't see him as much as I could have. But again, name that keeps popping up when I go through the stats and I look who the team leaders are and the conference leaders are. There's Aiden Gallagher. I'm just scrolling now. Block shots. He led by, a handy margin over Will Magnuson this year for the conference lead. Rico Blasi, our Tommy's coach, he talks about paying the price all the time, and Gallagher pays the price probably in the form of bruises in a lot of areas, and he keeps doing it. So he's got that hockey mentality. You got to give him credit for that.
And then I guess, Jack, just to Loaf's case, I know he's kind of changed his role a bit from, I think, years past when he was the defensive stalwart, right? He was the shutdown D, and he kind of has taken on more of an offensive role this year.
When I saw that list or saw those finalists come out, I thought it was funny because I think if you're really going by the best defensive forward on the Beavers is probably Will Magnuson, who is, I
defensive
think,
defenseman.
Paired with...
Yeah.
Yeah, sorry, defensive defenseman. I think he's been with both Polkamp and Loft as sort of the gritty block shots, sort of rough type guy. And that was Kyle Loft's role for probably 4 to 5 years at Bemidji. When they had Elias Rosen and Wills Mollick were the guys that would be sort of the power play quarterback, offensive defenseman guys. But this year, Loft has really stepped up and has been, one of their go-to their go-to goal scorers, which I think maybe, I don't know if that surprised him, but I think he would be the first guy to tell you that he likes doing the little gritty things as much as scoring. And I guess I'll just say that I, from a defensive perspective, I know that he got injured in one of the games, I think against St. Cloud, early in the season, St. Cloud State. He blocked a shot off his, I think off his wrist. I can't remember, but he was out for a good month with a blocked shot injury, which I guess maybe speaks to the fact that he is willing, even though he's one of their top scorers, he's still willing to get down there and sacrifice himself for the team. So obviously he's a captain, he's a fifth year, he's from Mankato. So I know whenever they play the Mavericks, he's always got a good game for his hometown team. So, I mean, he's also a very important player to the Beavers. He is a very good defensive player, but maybe not the first guy I would have thought of this year specifically.
All right, let's move on to the semifinals. I know we've touched on these teams already, obviously, from their quarterfinal victories, but we have, because of the reseeding, you have Lake Superior State going to Bemidji State. And Sam, your thoughts on this single game? We talked about, you know, anything could happen. I'm sure the Mavs would love to host, right? And they can still do so with a win over at Tech and a Lake Superior upset of the Beavers.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I'm looking quickly at Lake Superior against Bemidji this year. It looks like they swept them early in the year. Obviously, the teams are extremely different, but they did win that season series. The second series in Bemidji, this is just CCHA hockey for you. Friday night, Bemidji wins 7-1. Saturday night, Lake State wins 6-1. Like, how do you have a 11 goal swing from one night to the next? That just boggles my mind. But that's, you know, again, this is a one game situation, so you don't have a chance to respond. So whoever has the better game plan, whoever has the better energy in that one game, they're going to be the team that wins. Lake State is at a severe rest and practice disadvantage. They just played three games. The bus trip, I've done it, from St. Paul to Sault Ste. Marie stinks. Yeah. They had to make that trip. Then they're probably busing out, I would guess, Friday morning, maybe even Thursday night, and try to get settled into Bemidji. But, you know, you hear in, like, professional sports, you're always hearing about the rest, you know, the rest disadvantage. There's a major rest disadvantage right now for Lake State. So Bemidji's clearly the favorite. However, Lake State won the season series, so maybe there's a little matchup benefit for them. And I think Ethan Langenanger has been playing really well in goal. So I think anything can happen.
Jack, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, you know, they did win that season series, but if you look at who was playing or not playing.
That's true with any of these Shoal series, right? Who was actually on the ice for any of these teams?
Especially if you look at, like, Shoal missed all those games. I think he got injured in the St. Thomas series the week before. They played Lake State the first time in the Sioux, and they lost. I think Kevin Enright played both of those games, and they struggled a little bit. And I don't think Shoal was not back until the week after that second Lake State series, where it was 7-1, 6-1. So that, I think, is an X factor. With Shoal there, I think Beavers probably like their chance a little bit more than if he's not there. I think Judding missed that second series too. But, you know, I think Lakers are dangerous, as the Beavers have seen. And I guess it doesn't really matter who is in goal, because we know that they can score. But I think I would prefer, if I was Tom Sartori, to have Shoal in net and not. So, like you said, one game deal, you never know what's going to happen. So I think it should still be a pretty entertaining game, regardless.
And before Bemidji went on their run here, they were having a little bit of struggles with kind of their starts, right? Their first periods were an issue. They've cleaned that up a bit. I think they still gave up the first goal to Ferris last Friday. So they're not completely gone, but I think that's something to definitely pay attention to, that opening, how those teams come out of that game, because they're going to be a lot of energy involved.
Yeah, and they didn't score until second period on game two.
The Mankato Friday, right? The Friday before, they didn't score until second period. They scored six.
I think especially the first goal, whoever scores the first goal in those games are going to be Interesting, because I know Brian Schultz on the Beaver broadcast was saying that Beavers only won three games when they have not scored first, maybe four now with the Ferris game, but that's not a great open for them, especially against a team that can score a lot like Lake State.
Sam, the other game up in Houghton. I know you've been up to the MAC. You know, real quick, what do you think about this one?
Yeah, Michigan Tech won the season series 3-1. They've got, I think, the best home ice advantage in the CCHA, best student section, great arena. That's Advantage Tech. I think they've got the better goalie in this matchup, Advantage Tech. I think the Mavericks have the best player in the series and Sam Morton, Advantage Mavs. One game situation, I think I go Tech. I think I'm going to go Michigan Tech. I think that there's enough youth in Mankato where Tech's kind of veteran leadership will win out. I know they've got some young players as well, but I'm going to go Michigan Tech in a tight one, maybe overtime.
Yeah, Jack, Tech is trying to reverse some course from maybe the last, last year they lost at home to Northern. They're trying to get over that hump and get back to a title game here. What do you think it's going to take, and who do you think has that advantage? Sam kind of laid some things out nicely there.
Yeah, I mean, I agree that I think a lot of those points are probably correct. Although with a one game shot, I think I would be a little more nervous being Tech with a one game shot, just because of how they played against Mankato in the recent past, not necessarily this year. I know they have a pretty good track record against them, but I mean, all these games this year have been pretty close too. I mean, 3-1, 4-2, and looking at the other, trying to look for the other two games that they played against Mankato this year, 3-2, 3-2, one of them was overtime. So these are all really close. And I know that, I mean, last year, the last couple games of the regular season, when the McNaughton Cup, there was some controversy. So I don't know. I think if I'm a Michigan Tech fan, I'm a lot more nervous than as a Minnesota State fan, where you're sort of playing with house money, maybe not expected to be there. So I think I would take Mankato in this one, just also to be contrarian. But I think that's, I don't know, the way that they've been playing, you think that maybe they're going to have a breakthrough against Tech finally this year.
Well, I'm glad we've covered our bases there on that game. Should be an exciting weekend, guys. I want to thank you guys for coming on. And Sam, thanks for joining for the first time. We appreciate you at the CCHA show.
Yeah, happy to be here. Thank you, Perry.
All right, guys, that'll do it for us. And we'll be watching this weekend a couple of big ones, and we staggered them so you can watch them both. It should be a fun Saturday.
Woo!
Thanks for listening to this episode of the CCHA Show. For stories, scores, stats, and more, visit ccha.com. We'll be right back.